Some of the most popular tales of the Old West, written in the first half of the 20th century, came from the mind of Zane Grey. Turns out his real name was Pearl Zane Grey. He was born a little late for the Old West himself in 1872, but he came to love the West, especially the Rogue River in our part of the world. It's on the banks of that river that he built a cabin that survives today, a cabin that just received recognition as a historic place. Dwayne Erickson from the Bureau of Land Management is in the studio to talk about the designation of the Zane Grey Cabin. Dwayne, welcome to The Exchange.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So give the backstory. Where did Pearl Zane Grey come from, and what brought him to Oregon?
Well, he, like you said, he was born in Ohio, and he was a gifted athlete. He got an athletic scholarship, played semi-professional baseball, and he went to school to become a dentist, as his father was, and he really wanted to be a writer, and he willed himself into that role, even though he was not a gifted natural writer like many people. He was many, many times submitted books for a publication, and it was only after many, many times he was successful, and then one of his books, Riders of the Purple Sage, became one of the landmark Western novels of all time. Is on the Library of Congress, most influential books in America.
I pulled out his list of works, and I had to divide the page into three columns to fit them all onto one sheet because there are just so many of them, including stuff that a lot of it, I mean, probably the whole last column, published after his death in 1939.
That's true. I think he's credited with 90-plus books, hundreds of magazine articles and journal articles, and over 130 movies were made from those books. In his time, he sold over 40 million copies of his books, and they're still being published.
And I noticed that he was trained as a dentist, too. Did he ever actually practice as a dentist?
I understand he briefly did practice as a dentist, and he did not like it.
Okay, so what did Zane Grey do on the Rogue River? I mean, when he got to the Rogue River, I mean, there are lots of ways to enjoy it. What was his preference?
Well, he was a consummate fisher. He was a very skilled fisher, and he loved the outdoors in the West. And in the Rogue River, he recognized one of the last wild places where he could get away from the hustle and bustle of towns. There's no road access out there, and there to this day is no road access. And that's what drew him to the area.
And so how long before he built the cabin?
I understand he first came to Oregon and the Rogue River in 1919, and he bought the property in 1925, and with the help of a local guide named Claude Barden, built the cabin in 1926.
And he bought the land? From whom?
It was the Winklebar Mining Association. It was a patented mining claim. All the land around it was federal land at that time, and that mining claim was patented, which means they owned the land, not just the mineral rights, but they own the land. And he purchased that, never intended to mine it. He wanted the remoteness because it's a long ways off from anything, and that's where he built his cabin.
Where is the nearest road to Winklebar?
There is a road to the Rogue River Ranch. It's a 7-mile hike up the trail from there, but that road's not open in the wintertime because it's not maintained, and it gets pretty good snowfall up on the ridges. If you go from Grave Creek, I believe it's a 19-mile hike or 17-mile hike, and much of that trail's historic old trails that he would have traveled on in his time.
Oh.
Or you can take the boat river raft. There's guides, and you can take your own boat down the river if you're an experienced rafter. We don't recommend people that aren't experienced to endeavor that because it's Class 3 rapids, and there's Rainy Falls, which is, I think, Class 4.
That is the faster section of the Rogue River, yeah. Things get a little more wild downstream from Grave Creek.
It still is.
Okay, so give us an idea of Winklebar and some of the features of that stretch of the river.
Well, there's not a lot. It's a narrow, winding canyon, and there's very few places that are level enough for a homestead or a cabin, and almost all these have had cabins or even prehistoric Native American sites at one time or another. And this is one of the best ones. It's on the inside of a horseshoe bend of the Rogue River, and it's high enough up above the river that the Rogue River is notorious for flooding. In 1927 and 1964, there was a landmark flooding that wiped out most of the cabins, and Zane Grey's cabin was up high enough. So he really had prime real estate down there.
And how far above the river is it?
I would say it's about 50 feet above the river, but it's protected on the inside of an oxbow bend.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the river tends to flow the other way away from it. Zane Grey traveled the world, I noticed. I mean, he has got places named from all the way to New Zealand and back, and he died in 1939, so I mean, 14 years after he built the cabin. What had happened with the cabin for the 77 years since?
Well, I believe the Zane Grey family held on to it until the early 60s, which the Haas family acquired it. And the Haas family is the heirs to the Levi Strauss and they also owned the California Angels, and they used it for a fishing resort like he did. And they did some improvements. They put in a little grass runway and built two small houses where they're pretty modest houses, but in the context of being on the river away from nothing, they look like modern houses in a subdivision in Medford. But it's a modest place, and they flew in once in a while and had guests, and they were really good stewards of the land. They would let people visit the Zane Grey cabin, and they kept it standing all those years. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't have it.
So what kind of shape is it in now?
It's in very good shape right now. When the BLM public acquired the property in 2008, it was probably a year or two away from falling down. It was being held together by some boards that weren't original, and the roof was not even resting on the logs. We were able to get a grant from the Farley Tyus Foundation, and they helped fund this. And it's really fortuitous they did, because it was a year or two away from falling down. And today we are able, it's very stable and everyone can visit it.
We're talking about Zane Grey's cabin here on the Jefferson Exchange with Duane Erickson from the BLM. Do I call you archaeologist or historian or both?
Well, I think like everyone else in the BLM, I wear many hats. My job titles, I'm the archaeologist for the Abandoned Mining Lands Program, but if you work for the BLM, you learn to wear a lot of hats. And so I have a master's degree in historic preservation, and I was a journeyman carpenter before I worked for the BLM.
That's a good set of skills to have in this particular instance.
And because of it, because we could do this in-house, between the grant from the Farley Tyus Foundation and Todd Calvert, he was one of the river people, we were able to do this cabin using just trees and materials on site. And one of our biggest expenses from the BLM is probably gas money getting out there.
No doubt.
So it's really a good bang for the buck for the public, because I think 17,000 people a year visit the cabin, and the small amount of money we had to invest in is a good investment.
The pictures I've seen, it looks pretty rough. I mean, does it have amenities like windows, for example?
It does have two windows. It has two windows and a small window in the back, a stove inside. He never intended to live there permanently. But while it's pretty rustic, it's very, very well thought out. After about two or three days of working on the cabin and peeling logs and stuff, you start noticing subtle things like every day about 1 o'clock, there's an upslope wind that comes up the canyon. And every day when the sun sets, a downslope wind. And he lined up those windows so he'd have an upslope and downslope wind. And the shelter overhang on the front is angled to shade it about 2 or 3 in the afternoon, which gives it, it's really a well thought out place. He really shows how in touch Zane Grey and Claude Barden were when they designed the cabin. It's very subtle, but it's very comfortable for how rustic it is.
They got to know the land and
you had
the features of it. Yeah, that's true. If you're going to be out there for a bunch of days away from other people and it takes you a while to get in and out, and you've got to make sure you're prepared for a while to go there. When was the last time, Duane, that we know that anybody actually lived in that cabin or stayed in the cabin?
Well, Zane Grey never visited after 1935. We don't have any evidence anyone stayed there after that time. There was a campfire ring under the front that someone camped in, but I don't think anyone permanently lived there after that time.
What about critters and anything taking up residence in there that was non-human?
No, but there are. That's every day when I was working on the cabin, there was a black bear that would sit about 50 feet away from me and eat blackberries and stare at me, and I'd stare at it, and we were at peace. It's a lot of wildlife there. You'll see deer and turkey every day.
Did you have bear spray out there with you just in case?
No bear spray. They're pretty mellow. They're just little black bears that if you give them space, they're generally pretty good.
So what is the situation currently with the land ownership? I mean, the BLM is in the picture, obviously, but how?
The BLM acquired the land in 2008 indirectly from the Haas family. That's because it's an inholding of private land along the Rogue River, which is one of the first rivers, is a wild and scenic river designated in 1968. And little parcels within that we've been trying to either exchange for other parcels of land or purchase outright. So when people go through the river, they get that wilderness experience. And it really is. You can go float the 30, 40 miles and you won't see any telephone poles, power lines, fences, with a few minor exceptions.
I noticed that the pictures of it, which I think you took most of them anyway, that you position them pretty well so that you can't really see the newer structures, but they are pretty close to the Zane Grey cabin, aren't they?
They are very close, and it took a little bit of artistic angle to avoid them in the background. And that does, on the National Register, are there modern things that detract from the eligibility? And that is one of the things that minorly detracts, but it's still getting the original location, and it's still the original materials. clearly an eligible property in the National Register.
So what does the status do? What does placement on the National Register of Historic Places do for something like Zane Grey's Cabin?
I think it shows we're long-term stewards of this property. And with the new roof we put on and replaced some of the rotted logs, it's probably good for another 10, 20 years. But looking down the road 10, 20 years from now, if we need to get a grant or something and it's on the listing, we would be eligible for grants and that might not be eligible later. So it's kind of a long-term investment showing that we really care about the property.
So are there plans for the other structures there?
They are still working on a management plan. There are some obviously logistic issues because it's so far away from everything else, trying to maintain modern structures. And the plan is still being worked on by management.
You mentioned a grassy strip. As in a landing strip for planes?
There is. It's a very small, very scary strip.
You landed there, I take it.
You can't land there anymore. It's overgrown a little bit. One interesting side story of this, I believe, is 1980. Two of the last people to land there on a plane were two kids that stole a plane out of Wenatchee, and they were going to fly to Mexico to run away, and they ended up landing there. And one of the kids got out of the plane and said, "I'm never getting back in that plane again. You're not getting out of here." And sure enough, the person trying to get out of there, and they crashed and died. And the propeller of the plane is still in the wall of the Zane Grey Cabin.
Is it really?
Yes.
Wow.
So I don't encourage people to try to land their planes there. It's not legal and it's not safe.
No. So that's a permanent fixture then of the Zane Grey Cabin, I guess, unless it falls out by itself.
That's correct. Part of the story.
Okay. So what is the situation for people who have a greater interest than looking at your pictures? I mean, is there an opportunity to actually see the place? Is there any interpretive stuff that goes along with it, given its remote location?
Well, the best way to it can be visited. It's a 17-mile hike from the Grave Creek trailhead along the Rogue River, which is a beautiful trail, and it's a day or two float down the Rogue. You have to get a permit for it or go on a guided float. In the wintertime, I believe you can go, jet boats do go up to it. I might be wrong about that. I don't want to misspeak. But it's not only a great place, but getting to it is part of the journey where you appreciate how far out it is and how remote it was and why he was drawn there. And it wouldn't be the same place if it was easy to get to.
Yeah, that is very true. So are there... you mentioned that it's in good shape for another 10, 20 years maybe. Is anybody mapping out like a preservation plan for what's likely to need work next on the Zane Grey Cabin?
Well, part of getting nominated is you list it, and the one term they use is period of significance, and that's the time Zane Grey owned it from 1925 to 1939, and that's the period of significance. So if you're doing any preservation work, you'd want to restore it to that period. So that kind of gives us a guideline. We want to match what he did. And historic preservation is very different than carpentry. Sometimes the best carpenters are the worst preservationists because they always know a better way of doing things. And Zane Grey it's a roughly framed cabin. He clearly wanted to spend more time fishing than he did building the cabin, which I can't blame
him. To get shelter. Yeah,
it was, and it was never a permanent home either. So it's pretty crudely built, and even though it's intelligently built, he didn't spend a lot of time on it.
So does doing the carpentry work on that kind of go against the grain of the carpentry skills you've learned in modern times? I mean, you have to kind of set yourself back several decades to do what is required there.
You have to unlearn. as a journeyman carpenter, you always know a better way of doing things, and the cabin's woefully out of square and things lean, but that's just the way it is. You're not trying to improve it. You're just trying to match what he did.
This is a real source of pride, I gather, that you've been able to get to this step. And I looked at the application. This is not a short process, either in the work on the cabin itself or in the paperwork it takes to get registration on the National Register of Historic Places.
Yeah, it took quite a bit of effort. Again, I credit the Farley Tyus Foundation for funding the National Register process. It took several years, on and off, part-time. But when you write a National Register nomination, you're writing the definitive history of a local thing, and so someone 50 years down now can pick up that document and say, this is exactly what happened here and this is exactly what it was. And so when you're doing something definitive, you have to go beyond just going on Wikipedia or local sources.
Was there any doubt in your mind that it would get the registration? Was there a tension waiting for the word that it got listed?
It was a long process, but I was confident it was eligible all along, as whether or not we get it, stick with it, and get it done.
All right. Zane Grey's Cabin on the Rogue River, well downstream from Grants Pass on the wild and scenic section of the Rogue, now listed on the National Register of Historic Places, largely through the efforts of Dwayne Erickson from the BLM. Thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you.